All but one game of week 10 finished, completed. Speaking of finished and completed, the Chicago Bears. What in the world is going on with the Chicago Bears? It was 3 weeks ago that we were talking about Brandon Marshall and his belief that a 3-4 record is unacceptable. What's a 3-4 record plus two losses after that? Blowout losses, 51-23 at New England, then a bye week to get ready, extra time to prepare to go to Lambeau Field to take on one of their most bitter rivals in the Green Bay Packers, and they were blown off the field even worse in Green Bay than they were in Foxborough. 55-14, it was an embarrassment from start to finish. It was horrendous. Six touchdown passes for Aaron Rodgers in the first half. The Bears have been outscored 80-7 in the first halves of the last two games. 80-7. Everything went wrong. Everything fell apart. Everything looks bleak. And there's still seven games to play for the Chicago Bears. They have to turn it around and play at home this weekend against the Vikings. Bears haven't won at home yet this year. Probably means they'll win. Probably means they'll turn it around. But, you know, I don't know that the Bears have that quality that we've seen with some of these other teams. Look at the Jets on Sunday. They found a way to beat the Steelers. The Browns on Thursday night. That setting where everyone doubts us. So let's turn that into a way to get more out of our preparation, more out of our abilities, more out of our execution. Because everyone thinks we're going to lose. And that can be a very powerful impetus. I like that word, impetus. Impetus for a great performance and a turnaround to a season. And the Bears had that set up for them. I even raised that in the Week 10 3 and Out feature at ProFootballTalk.com that not enough of you are reading. I'm very disappointed about that. But those who do read it saw that I talked about the possibility of the Bears pulling this one off because we've seen crazier things happen. But you have to want to win the game. You have to want to do those things. You have to want to prove people wrong. And now the avalanche of criticism of this team is so great that I guess they have motivation to try to prove people wrong, but the only reason that they're in position to try to do that is because they're so bad. And now the question becomes how long it lasts. Will Mark Trestman, the head coach, be fired during the season? Who would you give the head coaching job to at that point? It's not going to be defensive coordinator Mel Tucker. It's just a mess. It's horrendous. It's as bad as it's gotten. I got a buddy in Chicago who said this is as bad as it's ever been. To lose like that, to lose to the Packers of all teams, it's as bad as it's ever been. So I think we conclude that Trestman is gone after the season. And the guy who hired him passed over Bruce Arians. Oh, GM Phil Emery, you could have taken Bruce Arians. You took Mark Trestman. Great experiment. Guy who had 8 years as a head coach in Canada. He's going to be going back to Canada or somewhere sooner rather than later. This is horrible. This is bad. And you know what? They did just well enough last year that it makes it even worse. Because first year, hey, we had some success. We didn't make it to the playoffs. Second year, just horrible, horrendous. I can't think of enough words without my thesaurus. I don't even make those anymore. Anyway, Bears host the Vikings on Sunday. Vikings may or may not have running back Adrian Peterson. Now, they probably won't, but maybe they will. Because here's the thing. The NFL trying to keep Adrian Peterson on the commissioner's exempt list for as long as possible, even though the original agreement was that Peterson would be on the commissioner's exempt list where he gets paid but he can't play until his legal case ends. His legal case is now over. The NFL has not reinstated him. The NFL Players Association intends to file a non-injury grievance if the NFL doesn't reinstate Peterson by 5 o'clock Eastern time today, which means this week, as one source at the league office told me earlier today, is going to be very interesting. Very interesting indeed. The NFL is trying to move quickly to do the personal conduct policy review on Adrian Peterson and make a decision about his status. But how quickly can you really move when you say to Adrian, we want your full court file, we want you to meet with experts, we want the experts to make recommendations to the commissioner, and then we're going to have a hearing. How quickly can all that happen? Not very quickly. Happens a lot more quickly if the NFL Players Association goes to court or to an arbitrator or whoever and gets an injunction or some similar decree, mandate, impetus, if you will. I guess that would work there. Again, thesaurus. Don't have one. Got to get one. Do they have them? Regardless, we could see Peterson reinstated involuntarily by the end of the week. And here's my take on this. I think the NFL is doing this on purpose. The NFL deliberately reneging on its agreement to reinstate Adrian Peterson because when the Radisson, Pepsi, name your sponsor, when they call up and complain about Adrian Peterson being back in uniform after what he apparently, allegedly, reportedly, admittedly, whatever, did, they can say, hey, we did everything we can. We tried to keep him on this commissioner's exempt list until we suspended him. We tried, and blame the union. Blame the union, blame the players, don't blame us. And Nike may be one of the ones calling the NFL if he gets reinstated, because Nike terminated its relationship with Peterson last week. We'll see how it all plays out. But it will be an interesting week for the Vikings and the rest of the NFL. It's been an interesting year for the Arizona Cardinals, not necessarily in a good way, at least not all in a good way. Super Bowl hosting jinx. The fates keep throwing everything they can at the Cardinals, whether it's Carlos Dansby leaving via free agency, Darryl Washington suspended for the year, Darnell Dockett gone for the year, John Abraham retires after his latest concussion, Carson Palmer's dead nerve in his right shoulder, when I always got a dead ligament in his left knee, ACL blown out, sir, on Sunday, same ligament that he tore on a low hit from Kimo von Olhoffen 9 years ago after the Bengals made it to the playoffs. It was Palmer's first playoff game, still doesn't have a playoff win. This was supposed to be his opportunity. It's not going to happen. So now the Cardinals have to turn to Drew Stanton, who was 2-1 as a starter during that period of time where Carson Palmer's right arm wasn't working the way that it should. Can Stanton get it done? Coach Bruce Arians has supreme confidence that he will. And look, coaches are always confident, but there's something about Bruce Arians and how he pushes his guys' buttons. I'm not going to start picking against the Cardinals simply because they've swapped out Carson Palmer for Drew Stanton. If you saw the end of that game yesterday, it's so much more than the quarterback. The defense is great. They're opportunistic. They make things happen, and ultimately they find ways to score more points than the opposition. That's something that happened for the New Orleans Saints for the first time in 20 straight home games under Sean Payton. The 49ers managed to win the game in overtime. Thrilling game, intriguing finish, controversy. We were in the viewing room watching this, and there was a debate whether they should try the long field goal, the Saints, at the end of regulation. And someone said, ah, just throw the deep pass, maybe get an interference call. And I said, they never call that unless it's blatant. Well, it was blatant, and they called it on Jimmy Graham. The push-off, he says he didn't push off. Jimmy, you pushed off. Parrish Cox, the guy who was pushed, says he didn't flop. Parrish, you flopped. Either way, it was pass interference, it was a gutsy call, and it kept the Saints from winning the game in regulation. They went on to lose in overtime. The Seahawks did not need overtime to take care of the New York Giants, although it was close for a while. Four touchdowns from Marshawn Lynch, career day. What was that story about them being done with Marshawn Lynch? He's not going to be back next year. They better give him a raise for next year. He's all they have on offense. Now, Russell Wilson running for over 100 yards as well. 350 total, franchise record for the Seahawks. The Giants fall to 3-6. There could be both New York teams looking for head coaches after the season. Peyton Manning could be looking for another record to break after the season because he's closing in on one that he very well could break week 17. Remember 2 years ago what a big deal it was when Drew Brees was going to break Johnny Unitas' record for most consecutive games with a touchdown pass at 47? That thing stood for 52 years. It's now been broken 3 times in the last 2 years. Peyton Manning broke it yesterday, and there wasn't even much of a peep about it. 48 straight games for Manning. Brees has the record with 54. The Falcons snapped Brees' record late 2012. Tom Brady got to 52. The Bengals snapped that last year. Peyton can carry it all the way back to a game against the Raiders to get number 55 and set the all-time record week 17 of this year, coincidentally. One last note, the Cowboys and receiver Dez Bryant doing this awkward back and forth about his contract. Look, it's not a good look for anybody. Dez Bryant had a good day yesterday, but the report that clearly was leaked by the Cowboys about off-field issues, concerns about Dez Bryant, reduced guaranteed money. That comes a week after Dez Bryant hires a new agent. This thing's on a collision course for drama, for something ugly. If the Cowboys really want this guy around, come up with a way to pay him. There are ways to pay the guy and protect yourself. They need to figure out how to do it because sooner or later, Dez Bryant's going to realize what's going on. He's not going to be happy. And he'll just decide to go year to year under the franchise tag. That's his ultimate fallback. Year to year under the franchise tag. And at some point, the Cowboys are going to have to let him make them hit the market because third year of the franchise tag means a 44% raise over the second year tag, which is 20% over $10, $11 million, whatever it'll be in March if that's what the Cowboys plan to do. When we return, more talk about the Chicago Bears with our good buddy John Moon Mullen of CSN Chicago. What is going on with this team? Will changes be made in season? The bye week's already come and gone, so it's too late for that. It's not too late to talk to John Mullen, though. We'll do that next. Then we'll talk to Kent Summers of the Arizona Republic about the best team in football, even without Carson Palmer. Still, the best team in football. Can the Cardinals continue their unlikely push, not just to the postseason, but to the Super Bowl? We'll talk to Summers to wrap the show. Mullen before that. We'll take a break. We'll be right back. This is PFT Live.
We're not a very good football team right now, obviously. We've descended over the last 3 weeks, and we didn't make any changes or any positive movement after the bye. And that starts with me, and I'll leave it at that.
I think Bears fans would have been happy if he had stopped with, "and I'll leave." It at that, who cares? "And I'll leave." I think that's what a lot of people in Chicago want to hear right now. Will they be hearing it? We'll find out. Let's talk to our good buddy John Mullen of CSN Chicago. When is Tressman gone? It seems like it's a foregone conclusion at this point.
Well, the Bears, in their august history, have never fired a coach in season. Then again, they've never had a loss like this, or two consecutive losses like this, and certainly to the Packers, which matters to the McCaskey family. They're sort of old school in that respect. They don't hate the Packers, but that matters more than other things. It still is a rivalry to them. That's the tipping point I'm really not sure of here, Mike. I mean, I would be very surprised if Mel Tucker, the D coordinator, is still employed at the end of the day. But for Phil Emery to fire his first head coaching hire, 25 games into his tenure, is also another massive admission of a mistake. So this is a question of how high up are they willing to admit mistakes, and that's a little hard to gauge because George McCaskey is in his first tenure. Phil Emery was his first hire. So a lot of variables, and I would be expecting Trestman to see the end of the season, but they have to make some changes, obviously, on the defensive side to begin with, possibly even on offense. I mean, if something happens, you could see Matt Cavanaugh, the head coach. You know, I wouldn't rule anything out at this point.
If Mel Tucker goes as defensive coordinator, who would take over?
Well, probably move Paul Pasqualoni up. He's the only guy on staff who's had NFL D coordinator experience, having done it in Miami and Dallas before this, however briefly. Reggie Herring, the linebacker coach. Again, these are two guys who were brought in before this season to fix some mistakes on the staff last year. Herring was a D coordinator in Clemson, Arkansas, a couple of places, but the logical thing would be to move somebody up. The only guy there is Paul Pasqualoni. You're obviously not going to get somebody to come in the middle of the season, especially as a lame duck situation.
Who makes the call on Tressman? If Tressman would go during the season, is that an Emery decision or does it go higher?
Well, it is an Emery decision, but and even hiring Tressman, it had to be with the more than tacit approval of George McCaskey, the chairman, and obviously the board at that level. It will be Phil's recommendation. However, in this situation, George McCaskey is a hands-on guy, much more so than his brother Michael was. He wants to put his stamp on this team a little bit. He's not a meddler. He's not Jerry Jones or Dan Snyder. But the family also knows that this is a sacred trust in this city, and when they sense fans turning on them, losing the trust, losing the no-shows start going up, that matters to this family. And in this case, it wouldn't surprise me to see George having a real harsh conversation with Phil. It'll come from Phil Emery, but when it happens, it would definitely be with some instigation from above.
Why did they hire Mark Tressman instead of Bruce Arians?
You know, Mike, that's probably the franchise question of the decade. To be honest with you, the personal feeling is he was a much better fit with Phil Emery. He's much more like Phil Emery than Bruce Arians. I mean, Bruce is kind of like a longshoreman, sort of refreshing in a lot of ways, but it's not a personality fit. I think when Mark came in here with literally a 13-month calendar, made a very impressive interview. All the plans were laid out in a 13-month, including going to the Super Bowl, all that sort of thing, which really appealed to Phil Emery's sort of analytics side. And I think he was much more agreeable to Phil Emery's level of control or involvement with the team. I think Bruce Arians was, reigning coach of the year. 60 years old, he's going to do it his way, although this being probably his final shot at being a head coach. I don't think it was as good a fit with Phil Emery as Mark Trestman was perceived to be. I mean, Phil and Mark, I mean, they socialize with their wives and things like that.
How bad will it be on Sunday when the Bears return home after 4 weeks with those two ugly losses in Foxborough and at Lambeau Field?
Well, I haven't seen how bad it was at Miami when they left the field at halftime getting booed then. They'll come out of the tunnel getting booed this time. It's an interesting. The Bears are part of the Chicago DNA, and especially when you've been built up. Jay Cutler was given a huge ovation. I know the family night, the big practice they have, one of the Friday or Saturday nights before this season during training camp. Jay Cutler maybe got the biggest ovation running out of the tunnel, and the feeling was going into this year that they're going to be good. They were borderline good last year, even with the defensive injuries. So it's only going to get better this year. And Chicago has a feeling of, you lied to us. You said we were good. And it is a we. You said we were going to be good because there's a real identity with this team. So, a sense of betrayal really stokes some anger in a city that really wants to like its Bears but finds this team not too likable, possibly starting with the personality of the quarterback.
How do we reconcile all of the comments from players and coaches about how well last week went, great week of preparation, great week of practice, everything was ready to go, hay was in the barn, here we go, and then it all just falls apart? How does it all fall apart if you have such a great week of practice?
Well, you start wondering two things there, Mike. One is it's not as good as that. And certain players, I know a former player this morning was telling me that, sometimes you coach wants to project positive and wants to encourage everybody. But the reality was, I talked to two guys off, just off to the side last night. I said, what happened last week? And one of them was an O lineman who said, John, we I don't know. He said, we really got after it all week. Martellus Bennett came out of the week with pain ribs. They were hitting so hard. So on the one hand, they did have a good practice. On the other hand, that doesn't mean anything, but doesn't carry over to Sunday. And that said, big picture, you wonder how many times, how often Mark Trestman is trying to, if you keep telling guys they're good, maybe they'll play good. Well, it obviously hasn't happened.
So is there hope to beat the Vikings? I mean, the Vikings are what are they, 4-5? Is there any shot that they turn this thing around this week?
I'd be surprised, honestly, because the Vikings are 4-5, but haven't they won their last two? I mean, they're sort of 4-5 with a bullet. Can we still use that term that we used to be on the pop charts when a record was moving up?
They may be two wins and 4-5 with a cannonball if they get Adrian Peterson back by Sunday.
Exactly. I think people will be coming out to see AP maybe for the last time rather than coming out to see their Bears. We've been around enough, Mike. I mean, anything can happen. And, this team looked like it was absolutely given up for dead even after the Buffalo win. You lose at home to the Bills in overtime. What can be worse? And then they go on the road and beat San Francisco and beat the Jets, which obviously isn't looking like all that much of an accomplishment. But I don't know how much it's going to turn around, Mike, because the degree of dysfunction is so broad. They're having penalties on the opening kickoff. They're false starts on the first snap. I mean, there's just so much disarray. They had the second most yards of penalties in franchise history yesterday, and this is in a must game.
Somebody made a great point last night. With Jay Cutler tied to the team for the next couple of years by virtue of all the guaranteed money, why not bring in Mike Shanahan to coach the Bears as of next year? Any talk about that? Would that even be a remote possibility?
No, that name kind of hasn't come up yet, and you wonder whether Phil Emery would be comfortable with somebody like Shanahan, who wants obviously used to a lot of control. You're not going to see. You will be seeing names like that for sure. But the process there is kind of interesting. Jay Cutler has certainly got the reputation of being a coach killer, and this is certainly going to advance his legacy.
Well, something's going to give in Chicago. It feels like it's already given. The question is, what's the fallout? We'll be keeping an eye on your work at CSNChicago.com, and have a feeling we'll be talking again down the road. Thanks, John.
Okay, Mike. Talk soon, buddy.
There he is, John Mullen, CSN Chicago. Great stuff about the Chicago Bears. Not a great team right now. Where do they go from here at 3-6 and with a couple of abysmal, historic losses, bad performances, and who knows? But it's not all about negativity. Let's talk when we come back about a team that has been the fountain of positivity, a team that used to be in Chicago, the other half of the truly oldest rivalry in the NFL. It's not Bears-Packers. They've just played the most times. The oldest rivalry is Bears-Cardinals. Chicago Cardinals, by way of St. Louis, now in Arizona. Kent Summers of the Arizona Republic will join us after the break to talk Cardinals. We'll be right back. This is PFT Live.
Every guy that puts a hat on Sunday is going to have a hand in this win. And it never fails with this football team. They're as resilient of any bunch I've ever been around.
It's also, again, a testament to this team, the offensive line, to the wide receivers, to the tight ends, to everybody. You know, our offensive unit to go out there and produce. That's our job. And then the defense went in there and took it home for us.
The first guy was Coach Bruce Arians. The next guy was quarterback Drew Stanton, who will be the starting quarterback, presumably, of the Cardinals until further notice because of Sunday's injury to Carson Palmer. Looks like another torn ACL in the same knee where he suffered that torn ACL 9 years ago. Joining us now to get us up to date with the team that holds an unlikely 8-1 record. You can find his work at azcentralsports.com. You can find him right here, right now. He's Kent Summers. And Kent, let's just start big picture. Who in the world would have expected the Cardinals to be 8-1 through nine games?
Nobody I know of who's has a brain in their head or any sense at all. I mean, nobody saw this coming. I thought they would be a good team. You know, I thought that they had a chance to be 6-3 or so at this point, but not 8-1.
Now, it's not going to get any easier going forward. They've gotten some big wins in the past, but you look at that schedule coming up. Two games against the Seahawks. They have to go to St. Louis. They have to go to San Francisco. They've got the Chiefs. They've got the Lions coming up this weekend. Can they keep this going with Drew Stanton at quarterback?
I don't know that they can win at this pace, not with the schedule and not with the quarterback change, but I think they can still finish strong. I mean, I do think this is a team, if Stanton stays healthy, I think they could finish with 12 wins or so. I really do. He's played that well in the four games that he's come in, and these guys have a lot of faith in him. He knows the system really better than any quarterback on the roster, having been with Arians in Indianapolis. But, you know, the big question with Stanton is, can you keep him upright? Can you keep him healthy, especially against the teams they're playing, and especially, you know, since he's suffered a concussion when they played Denver in the fourth game of the season?
Any thought of bringing in a veteran who would be game day ready to come in and help out if Stanton would get injured instead of rookie Logan Thomas?
Well, I'm sure they've thought of it. I just don't know who that would be. You know, when Palmer was out with the shoulder, they added Dennis Dixon to the practice squad. He was with Arians with the Steelers and knows the system as well as anybody. You know, the other option that's been floated around is, you know, Ryan Lindley is on the Chargers practice squad. He was here last year and in training camp with this team. He would know the system, but you know, I think as far as backups, I think it's going to be Logan Thomas, the rookie from Virginia Tech. And you know, that's shaky ground. But, you know, there's no NFL team that'd be comfortable going to its third quarterback. And these guys are obviously no exception.
Yeah, and this all happened 2 days after Carson Palmer signed a new 3-year contract extension that gives him a lot of guaranteed money, protects him through 2015. And look, obviously now it's easy to say that the Cardinals made a mistake because they accepted the injury risk, and then in the first game after the new contract, the injury risk became reality. But do you know whether there was any disagreement within the organization? Because I don't get the idea Carson Palmer was destined to hit the market and make a ton of money. Why did they have to do this deal now when they could have waited until after the season and ensured that Carson Palmer would be healthy when 2014 ended?
Well, I think they felt like this was the time to do it. They had some cap room this year. I think they were able to, you know, shove some of that deal and take some of that space this year, and they just wanted to know going forward. I mean, they wanted everybody to know that Carson Palmer was their guy. They didn't want to take the risk. What if this team goes on a run and deep into the playoffs and Palmer, you know, still continues to play lights out, then the price tag really goes up. The organization really thought Palmer and his agent, David Dunn, were very reasonable in this, that they could have made things a lot more difficult than they made it. So obviously the team thought it got a pretty good deal in this, and just a freakish thing, and you have to feel for Palmer. I mean, I know the guy's made well over $100 million in his career, and and all of that. But he was, you know, he's finally in a place in a system with a coach and management that, that he feels like, you know, he's got a shot to win a title. And then for something like this to happen is, you know, it's really too bad for him.
You know, I just in my experience of big decisions like this, there's always at least one person who's the naysayer. And the naysayer is probably walking around today with the chest puffed out a little bit. I know it's a tough day to be doing that, but there's got to be somebody who feels vindicated that they rushed into this, and as luck would have it, that's what happened. Speaking of luck, the Cardinals had just bad luck all year long, but they keep finding ways to overcome it. They're supposed to be the Super Bowl hosting jinx. Fate is throwing everything they can at them. How do the Cardinals continue to overcome the loss of the key players, whether it's free agency, suspension, injury, whatever? Now, Palmer, how do they keep finding ways to overcome that?
It's going to be hard. I've been amazed what they've been able to do so far, especially defensively, you know, with all the losses from John Abraham to Darrell Washington to Darnell Dockett to Carlos Dansby, et cetera. I've been stunned by their success on that kind of the ball. On offense, there's been a feeling like they really haven't put everything together yet. They haven't had that game and where they've just busted out, that they have too much talent to kind of be as inconsistent as they have been. So, you know, the thinking was if Palmer stayed healthy, they would really bust out offensively and even be better in the second half. But, you know, Bruce Arians has really fostered an air around here where they have a real belief that the next guy is going to play well. He rolls out sort of all the cliches, the next man up, et cetera, et cetera. But these guys buy into it. And I think, you know, general manager Steve Keim and his staff have done a nice job of filling holes with veterans who are really solid people and hard workers. And, you know, they keep the younger guys in line. And, you know, Arians has just done such an incredible job. It makes you wonder why he didn't get a head coaching job for 20 years in this league.
Yeah, it is amazing. We talked earlier about the decision of the Bears to hire Mark Trestman over Bruce Arians, a decision that I think is going to haunt the Bears for as long as Arians is the head coach of the Cardinals and for as long as Trestman is the head coach of the Bears, if not longer. Flip it over to the defensive side of the ball. There's been some talk that Patrick Peterson wasn't living up to the new contract he got in the preseason. Seems like he's living up to it now.
Yeah, he really is. He's played much better the last couple of weeks. He's still the most penalized guy in the league, I think. He still puts his hands on receivers too much, especially when he doesn't need to. But, you know, he gets his first two picks of the season yesterday, his first interception return for a touchdown of his career. Seems to be really playing better. And then, you know, and they'll need it, as you said before, with Detroit coming to town and Calvin Johnson. They really need him to play at that level. And Antonio Cromartie's played well, too. You know, I think Patrick was bothered by an ankle injury earlier. And then there seems to be there are these mysterious references that both Steve Keim has made and Bruce Arians have made that, you know, some personal thing with Patrick or something. But nobody will say what it is, that something that he's overcome this season or that bothered him earlier. But all of it seems to be in the past now. It really does. But I still think someone like the Lions will continue to go at him knowing how many penalties he's been called for this year. He really needs to correct that problem.
Will the Cardinals go man-to-man, one-on-one, Peterson on Calvin Johnson?
That's what they've done in the past, especially when a team has one receiver who's clearly better than anybody else on the team. At times they have kept Peterson and Cromartie on, you know, their own side of the field, but last year, Calvin Johnson, you know, torched the Cardinals. He got a couple of touchdowns. Peterson guarded him for most of the time. I think they'll probably go back to that and hope that they can defend him that way.
Overall, how big of a test do you see the Lions being, both sides of the ball? I mean, they're coming to town, so you get the home field advantage. But is this going to be a litmus test of what we'll see from the Cardinals the rest of the way?
Yeah, I think it's going to be very interesting on a couple of fronts. I think, you know, the Cardinals' weakness on offense have been probably the three interior offensive linemen been very inconsistent. They've been adamant. Arians has been adamant that Jonathan Cooper, the seventh overall pick in 2013, is staying on the bench, not starting despite the problems in there. I think, you know, watching how that group matches up against the Lions and you know, and then I think watching Drew Stanton. He's a, you know, Michigan State guy, grew up in Michigan, drafted by the Lions, you know, and it didn't work out there. They drafted Matt Stafford, and then Drew had to move on. I think watching him face that organization will be interesting, and also his return to the starting role with Palmer out.
Well, we'll see what happens this weekend as the Cardinals try to take it to 9-1. They haven't been 8-1 since they were playing at Comiskey Park in Chicago. So it's a great run for the Cardinals, and it's fun to watch it happen. We'll see if they can keep it up. Kent, thanks for some of your time. We'll check out your work at azcentralsports.com.
Thanks, Mike.
There he is. Go to azcentralsports.com to get all the latest from Kent Summers about the Arizona Cardinals, the best season they've had in a long time. They did make it to the Super Bowl in 2008, but no one expected that. Remember that? They were 9-7. They won the division. People were saying this is the worst playoff team in NFL history, and they proceeded to run the table and get to the Super Bowl. This team could be good enough to win it, even with Drew Stanton or Logan Thomas or Ryan Lindley or Audra Lindley at quarterback. And if you know who Audra Lindley is, you're old like me. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Not here. I'll be back in West Virginia for another edition of PFT Live. Pro Football Talk on NBCSN expands as it does every Monday during the season, except for one a couple of weeks ago, to 90 minutes, 5:30 to 7 p.m. Eastern, 2:30 to 4 p.m. Pacific. Check us out around the